Hey everyone, this is episode 406 of the 343 podcast. I want to give you a little bit of background on this episode. I don't know if you know, but we have a YouTube channel and it goes up there first and then I make an audio version of it. So given that this episode had a lot about the US men's national team's victories over Paraguay and Uruguay, I want to make something very clear to you because we have a wide-ranging audience. First and foremost, if you're not interested in the US men's national team or MLS or the pro game, and you're more here for youth, soccer and youth development, you have to understand, I hope you understand, that understanding what's going on at the professional level is very, very important. And specifically, if you're here in the American soccer environment, understanding what's happening at the national team level is critically important. Having said that, this episode deals with a topic that almost all of us are susceptible to in a bad way. And that is looking at results, looking at statistics, looking at box scores, and deriving conclusions from them. Because you see, folks, when things are going well and a team is winning or a player is scoring goals, everybody's high. Everybody believes that this is the next best thing, right? Or if a coach is winning all the time, this is the next best thing or the current best thing. And the opposite is also true. But soccer is a lot more complex than that. It is so context dependent. And this episode illustrates the national team example of this specifically, because Pochettino was getting smeared left and right by the domestic media, by the domestic fan base, when the national team wasn't getting results, when he was making all these roster changes all the time and quote unquote experimenting. And lo and behold, just a couple of good victories in friendlies over decent opposition, good opposition, completely flipped their narrative. This is not the way of discerning what's happening in football. It really isn't. This is what leads 99.9% of people who want to understand the game astray. You have to peel back the layers of the onion. Having said that, we're going to get into the episode right now, but I must remind you, we sponsor ourselves. We don't accept outside sponsors. How do we do that? We have products and services for coaches at 343coaching.com. It is based on the seminal, the pioneering work of Brian Kliban, who helped revolutionize American youth development here. You get to see him in action, in his team environment, in his element, with the actual players, without things being scripted in any way, shape, or form. And you get a holistic methodology from A to Z on how to get your teams on the right track. So coaches, get your butts over to 343coaching.com, sign up right away, because the longer you wait, let's face it, you're just delaying the inevitable. And I won't say what that is, but I think you can understand. Parents, the same goes for you. You are coaches off the field. You need to mentor and guide your kids in an appropriate fashion. What is an appropriate fashion? Well, we help you understand that at 343masterclass.com. And lastly, if you happen to be coaching in the 7-versus-7 format, we have that specifically covered for you as well at 7v7coaching.com. All right, everybody, I hope you enjoy this episode. Here we go.
Pochettino's back, bro. He's the hero in American soccer again. After watching his press conference, dude, I love this guy even more, dude. Not even the first question and second question when he got pissed at the reporters, but on the third question, bro, you could tell he was like so upset. And the guy's like, hey, the Berhalter on the free kick, you know, he passed it to Serginho. He laid it off. It's just something you guys rehearse. And Pochettino's like, nah, we don't train it. He's like, fuck off, dude.
No, it's all coincidence.
Yeah. That's what he said. No, it was a coincidence or something.
Very sad situation. Keep going.
I'm Rizzi.
Please. Third question, no regular play.
The pressure is great. Okay, so on the first goal, Sebastian plays it short to Serginho. So in a situation like that, do the players have the freedom of thought to come up with that, or is that something that you work on as a set play?
No, we didn't work. It was all coincidence.
I was fucking laughing my ass off, dude, but. All right, where should we start? Do you want to talk about the game? You want to talk about the press conference? What do you think, B? Well, first of all, we talked about pressing in the last episode, okay? And you said before the game, if you want to watch a pressing masterclass, you know, watch Pochettino's USMNT. So did you see that, Gary? Did you see them organized in the way that they press? Hungry to win the ball? Machines?
Yeah, I mean, that's the reason I told that to everybody. And you were shocked, Benny, when you asked me, hey, what team should fans or media or players or parents be watching to learn more about pressing? And I'm like, you know, I think the U.S. men's national team. And you're like, what the fuck? What are you like? You're crazy. Because I always shit on the U.S. men's national team for years for very good reason. And obviously, we're not going to get into that right now. But you were shocked. But I'm like, bro, like Pochettino has this team doing what we recommend day in and day out. And he's been doing it, implementing it, and trying to turn away the shit show that the U.S. men's national team has been for 6 years. And the people can't see it. They cannot see it, Ben. And so now finally, with the results against Paraguay and Uruguay, everybody's a pancake. They flip from shitting on him to, oh, okay, the U.S. men's national team is buzzing. Everything's clicking at the right time. This is amazing. And like, bro, like literally yesterday you were shitting on the guy. So I don't know where you want to start. I'm gonna just react to you, man, and your thoughts.
Yeah. Well, let's start with the press conference, Gary. And obviously, Pochettino is pissed, and rightfully so. I mean, he took the first two questions as disrespect, as he should. You know, basically the reporters are saying, hey, you didn't bring your regular guys, right? And he took offense to the fact of, like, who the fuck is a regular? You know, trying to eliminate this entitlement culture that has existed in the USMNT for the past, I don't know how long, Gary, fucking 15, 20 years. You know, so we've talked about this a lot, man, even before all this stuff came up, that there's always been this narrative of, oh, this is the A team, this is the B team, this is the C team. And I think a lot of that comes from the pedigree of the players, right? Where they play, and the media thinks, oh, okay, look at this guy. He's in the Premier League. He's a lock starter. Yeah. Or, oh, this guy plays in La Liga. This guy should be a lock starter. But I'm really happy that Pochettino has kind of eliminated this mindset. And I don't know, dude. I feel like all those guys that weren't at Camp Jury that normally are, I feel like they're watching this and they're like, fuck, dude. Like, if I get called back again, I better be working my nuts off to get back on this guy's good side, you know? And rightfully so, dude. I mean, Pochettino could have said, like, yeah, you know, McKennie wasn't here or Pulisic wasn't here. But nah, dude, fuck that. He stuck to his guys that he brought, and he gave them the credit that they deserved. But I think this is a good step, Gary, especially going forward into the World Cup coming up, that nobody's place is secure, man. And now all these guys that weren't there, fuck, dude, they better wake their ass up, man. Because they were so easy in the past to come in chill mode and not really have to try that hard, because they're thinking, like, I'm the fucking guy. I'm an A-list team member. So why the fuck do I have to come in and prove myself? You know what I mean? So it seems like when they come back, dude, fuck, I think we're going to see these guys flying in the next time we see them.
Yeah. So many things to discuss, so many things to unpack. I guess I'll start with the low-hanging fruit, which I have always advocated for how important it is to have a foreigner be the U.S. men's national team head coach and not a domestic American, say, MLS coach. Because of this very reason, Benny, a foreigner, especially a high-profile foreigner like a Pochettino, is not beholden to the power structures here in the United States. He's not beholden to MLS. And he's also not beholden to the players of pedigree that you mentioned. So he's coached Mbappe, Messi, Neymar. And so you think that Christian Pulisic or Weston McKennie or Tyler Adams or Anthony Robinson or Musa or Dest, like, you think he's intimidated by those guys? You think he feels pressure to, oh, I have to call these guys in? You think he feels pressure to explain himself to those guys why he's not calling them in or why he's benching them? Come on, Benny. So that is what we need, number one, from a sporting perspective, at the top job in the United States soccer system. That's one. The other important reason is because the biggest microphone in all of American soccer is the podium of the U.S. men's national team head coach. And so we need somebody in that position to speak the truth. So the MLS coaches won't be able to speak the truth because they're dependent on MLS for their jobs. What happens when somebody is fired or their tenure runs out as a U.S. Men's National Team coach? And the only thing you've done is coach MLS or been in the system here. You aren't going and going to get a job overseas in Europe and get paid very handsomely. No, you're hoping that you got to get a nice little parachute job at Chicago Fire or LAFC or Dallas, you know, FC Dallas. That's your career. That's your next gig. So the last thing you're going to do is go against the monopoly's wishes. Contrast that to Pochettino. Pochettino could give a fuck. Like, he can give a fuck if you got fired by the U.S. men's national team, the U.S. soccer or something. He doesn't need a job in MLS. Does he want to play politics and be diplomatic, Benny, and be on everybody's good side? Of course, everybody's diplomatic. Even a Mourinho is diplomatic at times. So he's going to be diplomatic, but he's not going to shy away from being annoyed day in and day out by the stupid shit that the media say here in the States. And so when they ask him a stupid question like, oh, well, the regulars aren't here, you know, or the A team isn't here, he's not shy about saying, are you fucking stupid? Listen, I read the subtext. Anybody with two brain cells can read the subtext. He's basically calling those journalists imbeciles. You guys are stupid. Like, what is this? Honestly, what the fuck is this? And like you said, the third question took the cake for me too. Like the first two questions, he's like, you guys are dumb for telling me who the regulars are. And the third question is like, oh, was that a planned thing, the set piece? And like, nah, it was fucking coincidence. I'm just here as a fucking mannequin. It's all them on the field. Come on, Benny. Come on. So the public and the media need an education. And to get an education, you need harsh truths. And Pochettino gives the harsh truths. So I'll stop there, Ben. There's much more to say, obviously.
Yeah. No, honestly, Gary, Pochettino has fucking big nuts, dude. That's what I'll say, because it could have been so easy for him to call in the quote-unquote regulars, right? Because think about it, dude. If this guy had lost both of these last two games, I mean, people were already calling for him to be fired months ago, right? And so think about the uproar if this guy loses two games, right? And not only that, we'll get into this later, but people were so pissed when they saw the lineup come out, like, what the fuck, 9 changes, this guy's out of his mind, like, what is this guy thinking? But Gary, imagine that he lost those two games with the players that he brought in. Bro, the outcry and the media would be calling for his head, you know? So it could have, and listen, Pochettino might already have in mind the guys that he's bringing. Maybe he's still looking to fill, I don't know, 4 or 5 spots. And so it could have easily been like, all right, I'm going to call in that team, but he didn't. Dude, he called in all these guys and he's giving them a chance to prove themselves, but it could have gone the other way really bad. Like, Gary, imagine these fools lost both games. Imagine what we'd be seeing on Twitter right now, on YouTube. Everybody would be fucking pissed, dude. But no, this one has big nuts, and he's like, fuck you guys, you know? And also, it's a wake-up call to the rest of the players. Like, no, fuck you, dude. I'm going to call in people that actually want to be here.
Yeah. I look at it a little bit different from the big nuts perspective. I look at it as him putting himself in a win-win situation, if he's even thinking about that. What I think is going on is he's developed a strategy to get to the World Cup with players that are outrageously hungry, unentitled, unified, and with him and his technical staff being in a position to selecting the players that they truly believe fit what it is that they want to do. Okay. So if you call the regulars, the guys who have the pedigree already, then you don't get to accomplish all the things that I just said, because you perpetuate the entitlement culture. And so these players aren't going to go into the field like ravaged, you know, dogs to fight. The unification isn't there in the same way. The competitive nature isn't the same way. And he doesn't get the opportunity to evaluate 70 players, you know, out there, 80 players out there, to truly see, okay, who actually fits and who doesn't fit. Because maybe the player profiles from the players in Europe, Ben, just don't fit what he wants to do on the field. That's what folks here do not understand. people think, oh, Anthony Robinson plays in the Premier League, a lock starter. He's the best outside back for sure. No, motherfucker. What if Pochettino doesn't want an outside back who has shocking technical quality? Shocking technical quality. He wants somebody different for that position. Oh, Gary, that's impossible. What are you talking about? Anthony Robinson has exceptional quality. No, he doesn't. Okay. Or Weston McKennie. Oh, Weston McKennie's a lock. He's on Juventus. He's done all these sorts of things. He's played in the Champions League or plays in the Champions League. Lock starter, for sure he has to be there. No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. Maybe he does not fit what a particular coach wants to have in McKennie's position. Somebody else might be a better fit. Roldan might be better at what Pochettino wants than Weston McKennie. Oh, Gary, you're crazy. No, I'm not crazy. I'm telling you how it is, Ben. Does he have big balls? Sure, of course. If you don't have big balls, you're not going to be an Argentine professional. You're not going to be an Argentine national team player. You aren't going to be a top level coach in the world like Pochettino. So you have to have balls to get that. That's a given. But why he's deployed what he's deployed over the past year, I think is just smart for him to turn the ship around, the shit show that this was.
Yeah. I forgot to mention too, Gary, I don't know if they normally do this, but you see the guy sitting next to Pochettino before the conference started. And he's like, hey guys, just so you know, this is the first time that the U.S. has, beaten a top 15 opponent. In fact, why are we fucking doing this game? And I think it's just the Federation wanting to be we know what we're doing, Do you see that anywhere else in the rest of the world, or am I crazy?
No, I think I don't think that happens. I don't think you have some guy next to the subject kind of opening up the discussion and framing, what it is to come, or controlling the narrative from the get-go.
Okay. We have the head coach of the U.S. men's national team, Mauricio Pochettino. Just a few notes as we get started. This is the first time that the U.S. MNT has gone unbeaten in five straight matches against top 40 ranked opponents since 2013. That stretched from June 2nd to November 15th. The 5-1 victory ties the largest margin of victory against a South American opponent. The record was 4-0 against Bolivia in May of 2016. Also ties the record for the largest margin of victory against a FIFA top 15 opponent. The other time was against number 7 ranked Mexico, June 18th, 1995. And lastly, Alex Freeman becomes the second USMNT defender to score multiple goals in a game, tying Aaron Long from the game against Trinidad and Tobago, June 22nd, 2019, in the Gold Cup. If you have a question, please raise your hand and state your name and affiliation. We'll begin with Doug.
That was weird to me. That was weird. I had never seen anything like that.
It's strange. I don't know. I'm just glad that Pochettino called out these sacks that are in the audience. And I'm glad everybody else got a dose of humble pie. But I just don't think folks self-reflect very much, Benny. I don't think they look at themselves in the mirror and they're like, fuck, do I even know what I'm talking about when it comes to this sport? I think that's literally just yesterday they were shitting on the guy and now everything's great. Ben, it's so bad. Like in March, who are we playing against? I think it's like Portugal and Germany or something like this. What are these people going to say if we get blown out in those two friendlies? What if Portugal beats us 3-0 and Germany beats us 2-1 and those are our last games going into the World Cup? What are the fans in the media going to say? Oh my God, it's a shit show. What has Pochettino done? See the lineup that he does or whatever. They'll do the same thing all over again. They've learned nothing.
Yeah, Portugal and Belgium. So, two respectable opponents. Do you think we'll see, in this next camp, a roster that Pochettino, over the next couple months, Pochettino, is he going to be thinking all right, after I've seen all these 70 guys, right, like you mentioned, do you think the roster will look closer to what it will look like in the World Cup? Because, Gary, isn't it beneficial to have the team that is going to be there in the World Cup? Wouldn't you want them to spend more time together?
See, you brought this up last time we talked or whatever, and I told you, no, this is not, this is conventional thinking that, oh, you just already a year ahead, you already have the A team and you just get the A team, the same guys.
But now at this point, it's less than a year away. Dude.
No, I don't think that much matters, Benny, honestly. Does it maybe have to be a little bit more solidified? I think that does make sense at this point. I think it does. Would I be surprised if it's a huge hodgepodge again? I wouldn't be surprised, and I wouldn't hold it against the guy because I'm just not that big of a believer in, at the national team level, to have to do that, you know, before a World Cup. I think the most important thing in a World Cup is the unity, is having a, I don't know, just having unity. And you're going to come back and tell me, well, wouldn't it help unify? Yeah, but all these players have already played together for so long. They do know each other. You don't think Gio Reyna and Dest and Adams and McKinney and Musa and all these guys already know each other? They know each other, Ben. I don't know. I'm going to err on the side that, yes, it's going to be more solidified, but I just wouldn't be surprised if people again are like, what the fuck? Like you're calling in this dude again? Like what the hell? Like what if he calls Adjimang again?
He probably will, dude. But the way I'm looking at it also, Gary, is that the US didn't have to qualify for the World Cup. And so these Correct. Games that they are playing haven't been as meaningful as some of the other countries who are fucking throwing their best 22 guys together and fuck, you have to win these games, otherwise you're not going to the World Cup, right? So Welsh has kind of had a luxury of not having to do that, right? Because obviously the US is already qualified for the World Cup. So I don't know. Sure, I don't know. To me, it just makes sense. Like, wouldn't you want to have your guys together?
Well, what if he doesn't know who the guys are? What if it's still a toss-up? Like, I don't know if I want to take this guy or this guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Tanner Tessman. What I've seen, I'm not saying me, maybe I'm acting like Pochettino, right? I like Tanner Tessman. I don't know if I want to, you know, bring one of these other guys who are established, who are supposedly 18 players. Maybe I just get rid of those guys.
Yeah.
Done. And like, that'll be, that. You know what? Here's a little fantasy of mine. Just to gaslight the dum-dums out there, okay? It'd be so awesome if McKinney doesn't get called up the next camp. Imagine what people will say.
I thought you were going to say he doesn't get called up to the World Cup, bro.
Oh, well, you know, we still have another window. I just want to see how the fans and the media react to something like that, because you put them in a conundrum. They've just praised the team and say, oh my God, we just smashed Uruguay. We're so back. We're so there. People even think that we're going to get to like a semi or a final in the World Cup now just because of this result, okay? So I want to see if they change their opinion of that if the guy doesn't call him McKinney next window.
Yeah. I have a feeling, Gary, he'd be like a Klinsmann, right? And he didn't take Donovan to the World Cup, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like there's going to be one or two like big shockers that the media is going to say, like, what the fuck? Like, this guy didn't call up this guy, you know? I hope it's like that, dude.
Or at the very least, not start them in the World Cup. They're on the bench.
Yeah, that's true, too. Fuck, dude. I love having this guy as our manager, bro. It's been fun to watch.
It's the best thing ever. It's the best thing ever. Hopefully, something like this. I know the only thing that matters is the World Cup. So that's why I told you a long time ago, when you ask, how do you want the team to perform? Because it seems like you hate the U.S. men's national team, Kerry. You don't want to see U.S. soccer successful, because if U.S. soccer is successful, then that gives them political capital to go and continue being corrupt and all this sort of stuff, which is all true. And I said, you know what? If a quarterfinal would be the sweet spot. Quarterfinal. Because you get to a quarterfinal, it kind of proves, in some circles at least, it'll give the narrative that a foreign coach, an international caliber foreign coach, is the way to go in the future. So it'll take a lot of balls for U.S. soccer to then name an MLS coach to the national team after a quarterfinal World Cup appearance. If we get to a semifinal, maybe it's not as bad as I think. It's just I also don't want to have the establishment have the narrative that they're credible and have credibility, right? And that enables them to continue with the corruption even more so, saying the future is bright, this is amazing, semifinal, we know what we're doing, everybody shut the fuck up, MLS, rah, 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 we're on the right path.
No, you're going to see at the World Cup that the same guy that was sitting next to Pochettino at the press conference after the quarterfinal, bro. Yeah, by the way, this is the first time that the U.S. has eliminated a top 10 team in the World Cup. And bro, if you go back and look at the video and you, when that guy's talking and you just look at Pochettino's body language, he's like, what the fuck is this shit, dude?
Yeah.
It's hilarious, yeah. Dude. It's hilarious. Gary, give us a good rant, man. And I know we've talked about this a lot, but maybe explain for people that don't quite get it, like why Pochettino felt so disrespected by this notion of, oh, your regular guys weren't here. And again, I know we talked about this a lot, but give us a good rant, man, that the people need to hear. Because I think a lot of people, they saw that clip and I don't think they're fully grasping what it means and what he's trying to do and how he's trying to change the culture here.
Yeah. Well, there's two angles to it. The one that I think is most important, and from a rant perspective, is that the media here, and then as a consequence, the fan base, which read their trash, they're incredibly disrespectful people, Benny. Incredibly disrespectful. They disrespect those of us who work in the space. Those of us who slave over, are in the trenches, actually in the arena, as Roosevelt called it, with dirt on our hands and blood on our face. They're disrespectful to us from the pristine, clean, outsider peanut gallery. And so they frame these questions, not just the question from the other night, but they frame narratives that position themselves, the journalists, as the experts. And those of us in the arena, the coaches, the business people, that you name it, as the idiots, the incompetent ones. And so when we just get tired of it, Benny, and that's why I've had the attitude I've had for years, since the inception of 343, since 2009. All the articles that I've written, all the podcast episodes, all the posts on X, all this stuff is with that inside me. You guys are extremely disrespectful. So why am I going to continue being respectful to you? So it's kind of a tit for tat. You want to disrespect me? Okay, I have no respect for you. You're done with me. So that is what really happened there with Pochettino. He's like, now that I won and I have these marquee wins and we great results, great performance, I've now been quote unquote proven right for everything that we've been building with the technical staff. Fuck you, basically. Fuck you. You guys are clowns. You're incompetent. You don't know what you're talking about. And he even pointed right at the badge. He's like, hey, you're talking to the U.S. national team manager, not the janitor. You know what I mean? So, but because that's how they treat him and that's how they treat us, Benny, broadly speaking. Even the first time youth coach who's just getting started, he's treated like shit, Ben, by people who aren't coaches, people who don't know anything about football. So we get sick and tired of it. And I'm happy when they fight back a little bit, because most of the time we're handcuffed, as you well know, but the audience might not know. We're handcuffed. It's hard for people to speak out. It's hard. It's hard. So I'm incredibly proud of Pochettino. I'm incredibly proud of people like Mourinho, especially, who does this, has done this regularly forever. And I'm proud with Pep. Pep does it with a different angle. He does it kind of like Pochettino's third question. He's like, oh no, yeah, I'm just an idiot, you know, manager. I only won 5 Premier Leagues in a row, and but I didn't win the Champions League, so I'm an idiot. Sorry, yeah, maybe I should go work, you know, in some other profession. Just mockery, straight mockery, because that's what they deserve, Ben. On the sporting side, he answers the question that way about the regulars, because you want to support the guys that are here and make them feel great, Benny, and make them feel like they're accomplished and make them feel like they're in the running for making the World Cup, and show that you appreciate them and that you will protect them in the media, because the journalists are being disrespectful to the players. Oh, well, this was done without the regulars. You know, what do you think? Like, what the fuck? Like, you're disrespecting the guys who just beat Uruguay 5-1. and Paraguay 2-1. Why are you talking about players that aren't even here? They didn't accomplish this. The players that are here accomplished this. Incredibly disrespectful. It's no surprise. That is what they make their livelihoods on, Ben, is being disrespectful to others. And to boot, they can't handle when they are criticized. When a journalist is criticized, they can't handle it. They're incapable of handling it. They think that they are fucking the arbiters of truth, dude. So we need to fight back. And third and finally, before I shut up, Pochettino does that to also send a message to the players who were not here that you're in a dogfight, you're in a competition, nothing is given, you're not a guarantee in any way, shape, or form to make the World Cup roster. So in those three questions, he accomplished all of that.
What's going on right now, Gary? I touched on it briefly, but I want to hear your thoughts on it. What's going on in the minds of the players that weren't there or in the minds of the players that, quote unquote, get called regulars? You know, what are they thinking right now? What are they feeling? How is the next 6 months going to look like for them?
Yeah, I think it's a case-by-case basis, and it depends on the type of person and human that they are, and also how secure they feel. So, for instance, Pulisic, I'm sure, feels incredibly secure that he's going to the World Cup and he's going to be somebody in the World Cup that's important, a starter or something. So I don't think it affects him all too much. But if I had to speculate what he's thinking, he's loving this because whoever his teammates are going to be at the World Cup don't have that entitlement and are going to arrive like rabid dogs to try to accomplish something because they know that Pochettino will not play them if they aren't part of the collective and they aren't giving 100% in every single way. So Pulisic, I'm sure he's on cloud nine. This is exceptional news. For the guys who are more on the bubble, as they like to say here, who are insecure, who it's not quite certain whether they're even in competition for a spot, let's say like a Musa, who hasn't been called up in God knows how long. Again, now it depends on what type of human you are, because I know intrinsically human nature is you want to win because it's a zero-sum game, Ben. Like zero-sum game meaning if somebody else gets called in, you don't get called in. So it's not a win-win for everybody. It's a win-lose. One person win, one person loses. So if you're on the bubble, you probably not liking that the U.S. men's national team did good. It's just human nature. And folks might be naive out there thinking, oh, that's silly. Look at the players congratulating each other on Instagram and liking each other's posts and, you know, commenting great things about each other, even if they're a competitor. Guys, you kind of want your competitor to fail and slip up so that you get the opportunity and you get the chance. This is just human nature. You aren't rooting for the guy who is going to take your position. Let's be real. So they're shitting their pants, Ben. And the guys who are not on the bubble, who might feel secure that they are going to the World Cup, like an Adams or a McKinney, they're not as secure as Pulisic from the perspective of, they'll go to the World Cup, but now they're not knowing if they're going to play or be a starter or they don't know what their role is going to be there because it might be somebody else who's actually playing and not them.
Gary, you've tweeted this a couple of times, like apart from one or two players on the USMNT, nobody's a lock. Obviously the one is Pulisic, right? Who's the two? If you don't mind me asking.
No. Well, there's a huge gap between Pulisic and everybody else. So that's why I didn't mention a name of who the second or maybe the third or lock potentially is. But if I had to pick one, probably Chris Richards, because look, the guys who are part of the, how do you say, the spinal column, right? I always talk about the spinal column in football, how that is the critical stuff. The keeper, center back, center mid, and the striker. Those four positions are the most crucial of them all. It gives you the most stability. So I would probably say Chris Richards for his club, you know, situation, run of form, everything. And center back is a position that we're frankly quite weak in, very weak in. And so that kid gets the nod, I would suspect for sure, and probably is starting World Cup games for sure. That would be my second one. And it seems like that kid never got to the point where he was part of the entitlement culture.
Have there been any guys, like even if they're in MLS, Gary, that you've seen in this last couple windows that have impressed you? Where maybe you didn't notice them before and you're like, oh shit, this guy actually might be what Pochettino is looking for? Or are they all kind of vanilla and similar in the sense that they all kind of do the same thing? They all are basically the same player if you look at it.
They're all kind of the same, Ben. Oh, there's nobody who is an outlier. There's nobody who is a, you know, two sigma, three sigma, a deviation away from the standard, from the mean. So none really surprise me, honestly. They're almost all like interchangeable cogs for me. When people were complaining about Arfstin, you know, the outside back, when he first made his debut with the national team with Pochettino, everybody was talking shit on him. And I'm like, you can look it up on X. I mean, maybe we'll insert it here, the post, so people don't have to go do their own research. I gave my impression. My impression was good player. I'm impressed. From the perspective, he was an unknown and he came in and did what he did on the offensive side. And then I talked about the defensive liabilities that he brings to the table, that he's just defensively not there in any way, shape, or form. And obviously a big driver for that is that he plays in MLS, and in MLS, it's just not the same, Benny. You're not going to sharpen your skills very much. And lo and behold, it took the fan base, the media, 9 months or a year until they came around and kind of are finally starting to recognize Arfstin as somebody that's legitimately a World Cup contributor or contender. I just hate how long it takes them. It takes them to see victories by the team to change their minds about things. And it just sucks, man. And look, for me, but you're biased too, Gary. Look, we all have our biases, but people who don't operate in the space, their biases are outrageous, okay? And people who operate in the space, say like a Mourinho, like a Pep, like a Simeone, like they have biases too. But it's not the same level of bias as Joe Blow fan, US MNT fan writing shit on Twitter or Instagram, you know? And so I have my biases, but just as proof positive that it doesn't drive me, I talk shit on MLS for 16 years publicly. I've talked shit on MLS. Arfstin is from MLS, and I gave the guy a thumbs up from the get-go up until today. Like, I gave him the highest rating in my player rating post after Paraguay. He was the guy. He was the man of the match. And so you might think I'm biased against MLS. It doesn't hurt. It doesn't affect my player judgment. So to answer your question, did anybody impress me? No, they're all pretty much. I'm not saying Arsenal's spectacular or anybody's spectacular. They're all US MNT players. How's that? Which is why I say there's no A, B, or C, or D team, because I believe, I should say, I know, okay, but people get pissed off. I know that there are 150 players, American players, who can just slot into the US MNT and you would see hardly a difference from whoever's there now.
Yeah, Gary, as well as they have performed in the past two games, even if they continue the momentum, you know, Pochettino changes the mindset and the mentality and you see a new group, do you still think that we're levels behind the rest of the world? Like, I know in a World Cup, bro, anything can happen. Like, the U.S., they can make a semifinal. But, I mean, we're still levels behind everyone else. Right, Gary?
It's clown world. AYSO. AYSO clown world is what we are, Ben. And look, and people laugh. See, I want to talk a little about Bielsa, if you don't mind, unless you have something prepared about him, okay? I haven't seen the full press conference, which I hear went on for hours, because that's what Bielsa does in press conferences. He spoke to the press for hours after the defeat to the U.S. So I was just getting clips here and there. And one of the things that he mentioned was, yeah, it's just unacceptable that top Uruguayan national team players lose to, a second-rate U.S. team with players of limited ability. Basically is his quote. And the dumbasses here, right? The shit posters, idiots are like, oh, fucking Look at Bielsa saying that shit. Like, he literally just lost 5-1 and he's calling our players fucking limited or low skilled or something. Geniuses don't care about what you think. Okay. They don't care. You know what they care about more than anything, Ben, is the truth, is getting to the truth, arriving at the truth, which, by the way, is how you become remarkable and outrageously exceptional at whatever craft you choose to pursue. Because if you don't relentlessly pursue the truth, okay, the truth, and you operate based on a lie or self-deception, you're not going to be remarkable because you're battling against the truth of the universe, Benny. It's like, I want to jump off this cliff and fly like a bird, okay? Well, you better fucking know the reality, the truth of how the universe works, or you're dying, you're dead. Okay. Or whatever it is that you try to build, you're going to crash. It's over. Same thing in every profession. So Bielsa is a hardcore pursuer of the truth and the truth alone. He doesn't care if the media then mock him for saying what he's saying. But to answer your question, Manny, is our team still levels behind the rest of the world? Of course, it is clown world. That said, can the U.S. men's national team get to a semifinal of the World Cup? Could they even win the World Cup? It's all possible. It's not against the laws of physics for that to happen. Greece won the Euro 2004. It doesn't mean that Greece had the best players in the European Championship. It doesn't mean that Greece, the team itself, was superior to the other teams. Not in any way, shape, or form. They were probably the 10th best, okay? But they won the thing. Flukes happen. Leicester City won the Premier League. Whatever the odds were, 100,000 to one. Who would have thought that Leicester would win the Premier League? It's possible, Ben. And in a World Cup, a tournament where you only have to win, you know, it's only 7 or 8 matches or however the format's going to be now. Is it possible to get a lucky streak in 3 straight games during the knockout rounds? It's possible. The U.S. men's national team beat Spain, prime Spain, peak Spain in the Confederations Cup. 2-0, right? With the likes of Jozy Altidore and Michael Bradley, and Bob Bradley is the head coach. That doesn't mean that the U.S. men's national team is superior to peak Spain, World Cup champion Spain. You feel me? So we're way behind the rest of the world, but that doesn't mean we can't have a good performance. And it also, by the way, it doesn't mean that we can't get eliminated in the first round, in the group. And if we got bounced in the group at home and it was a fucking disaster, that does not mean or does not prove that Pochettino doesn't know what he's doing either.
Yep. But immediately fired, bro.
That's right? Fine. That's fine.
Well, since he brought up Bielsa, I want to well, insert the graphic here, but it's a tweet that Hercules Gomez, Gary, your favorite guy, he reposted this tweet. And we'll talk about Herc a little bit later, but he says, the guy that posted it was Adam Booker, okay, and Hercules reposted it. Uruguay head coach Marcelo Bielsa reportedly told one of his players that playing in MLS makes players lazy and that they must play elsewhere to make his squads. His Uruguay side is currently down 4-1 at halftime to the United States, and all 4 goals were scored by MLS players.
Okay, let me give a quick example of something I did after the Paraguay match. So, you know, I gave player ratings, and then somebody commented on my post saying, the amount of engagement you got on this post tells me everything I need to know. So the post didn't get a lot of engagement, whatever it was. I don't even know. Maybe it was less than 100 likes, something low. Okay. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to show you guys something, right? If I wanted engagement, if I wanted love, right, from the social media mob or something, I wouldn't speak the truth because the truth doesn't sell. I would shit post. I would post what I know people want to hear. I would feed into their biases and their bubbles. So the next thing I posted was Gio Reyna had a spectacular, all caps, spectacular performance. He's so back. He blah, 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 or whatever. Massive engagement, Ben. For that, I didn't mean it. I didn't mean it because literally moments ago in my player ratings, Gio Reyna got a good rating, for me a decent rating, but not something great. Arfstein was still the player of the match for me. And I said, the only reason Gio Reyna got this decent rating from me is because he scored a goal and got lucky on an assist off a deflection or that. And that's my honest assessment of the kid after that match, okay? Because he was invisible outside of those two actions. Are those two actions important? Of course, goals are important, Benny. The most important thing there is. But on a performance basis, overall, for 70 minutes, however long it was, invisible, pedestrian, did not exist. And then that's just the truth. But then I post something, oh, he's so spectacular, which is a fucking lie. Everybody's liking, retweeting, reposting, engaging, blah, 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 blah. So guys, if I wanted attention, if that's what I was after, it's so easy. It's so easy to manipulate the mob. You know, just find out what the mob wants and just feed the mob. Okay, so circling back to Hercules Gomez and whatever it is that this guy wrote about Bielsa getting owned by MLS players, there's two possibilities. One, you're feeding the mob what they want to hear. You're shitposting. You know better, right, about what the truth actually is, and you're just putting that out there to get engagement. Possibility number two is you're that stupid, right, and you actually believe you're stupid, and you actually believe your stupidity. Because the fact of the matter is, yes, is correct. MLS makes players lazy. It's among the least competitive leagues, if I can even call it a league, honestly. It's one of the least competitive leagues in the world. In the world. It's just folks need to recalibrate what is actually meant by competitive or competition. What is meant by competitive is something that forces every member, associate, every player, every coach, everybody involved, everybody is forced to operate at their absolute maximum at all times. That is what competitive is, okay? That is what competitive is. Competitive does not mean parity. Oh, where every team can win. It's evenly matched. You can lose to anybody. Anybody can win MLS Cup. That does not mean competitive. Competitive means that everybody's forced to operate at peak maximum effort. MLS does not do that. MLS, for the entire season, for the most part, players operate at 50, 60% of their peak effort, potential, intensity. And the proof is in the pudding, too. One thing I think fans would agree with, if they knew it wasn't coming from me, if it was coming from somebody else, they would agree with the fact that MLS playoff games, when they're single knockout in particular, are more intense than regular season games. I think everybody would agree with that. So what does that mean? That means that the players themselves had a lot more to give and they were not giving it during the season. So is Bielsa correct? Is Tata Martino, who also said similar things, correct? Are all these coaches and players, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, correct when they say MLS is not competitive? It makes people lazy. It's a joke. You don't get better there. They're absolutely correct, Ben. And just because a bunch of MLS players in the national team beat in a friendly against Uruguay, that doesn't disprove the fact that MLS makes players lazy. And by the way, those MLS players were not playing an MLS game. They were playing for their fucking lives to get a roster spot on Pochettino's World Cup squad, where Pochettino has made it obviously clear that if you're going to play for me, you need to be a kamikaze soldier for me.
Yeah. And it's easy to post that, Gary, when the score is fucking 4-1, right? Versus if Uruguay smashed and the MLS players did nothing, people are going to take that quote and be like, oh, see, Bielsa's right. He knows what he's talking about, bro. It's crazy. I know we're backtracking a little here, Gary, but I wanted to discuss really quick Hercules' comments on the press conference. And I want the audience to keep in mind that 3 or 4 months ago, this guy was calling Pochettino a fraud. You know, we went on this big rant. I think he has a whole video on YouTube. Like, I think the title is, it's time for Pochettino to go, or something. He should be fired, something like that. But he said that the USMNT just humiliated Marcelo Bielsa's Uruguay. We should be discussing that. Yet Poch's press conference will leave us with frustration over the lack of understanding that traditional USMNT regulars, such as Pulisic, Weston, Adams, Jedi, Weah, Tillman, Balo, Gio, Reem, didn't start or feature against Uruguay. Pochettino was being tossed a layup to talk about depth, competition, needing to earn your spot. It went off the rails for no reason. He set them up well tonight. That should be the focus regardless of Uruguay missing pieces. An identity is forming, an understanding of what the USMNT should be about. And again, this is coming from a guy that just called Pochettino a fraud, saying that he doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't have the experience to coach a national team a couple months ago. And now he's completely, I don't want to say he switched his narrative, but it seems like now he's kind of backtracking on Pochettino is not a fraud anymore.
Well, he's not bringing it up. He's not bringing up the sporting side. So now he's bringing up the political side, the diplomacy side, the mannerism side. So he's still talking shit on them. Let me tell you what triggers these people like Herc, okay? What triggers them is that they feel disrespected because Pochettino, now for a handful of months now, it started after the Guatemala game. Remember the Guatemala game where we're playing here in the United States and the stadium is full of Guatemalan Americans, okay? And they're rowdy as hell, a great atmosphere, great culture for the Guatemalans and not for the U.S. men's national team. And it was at that point, after that match, that Pochettino started speaking the truth about American soccer culture, U.S. men's national team, MLS culture, that they don't have that passion, that they don't have that feel for the game. They don't have that culture, and that he wishes that our country, the U.S., would have that sort of culture, the Guatemalan culture, the Argentinian culture. That's when his shit talking and the media shit talking kind of started. And ever since then, Ben, because in many ways they took that as a slight, as being disrespected. So Herc feels disrespected by Pochettino. And this is his way of fighting back, okay? Calling him a fraud all on sporting side. And now that clearly he can't do that anymore because he would look like an idiot, he chooses to look at Pochettino's press conference and his form and his style, just like what they do with Mourinho. Oh, this guy, instead of focusing on the positives, he went negative, you know, against reporters. See, these guys, Herc and reporters, like I told you before, they want to be the untouchables. They want to be the ones who are not criticized. They want to be the ones who are the arbiters of truth. They will tell the people what is truth and what is not truth. And when they see somebody like Pochettino, who has the biggest podium, criticizing them, they can't handle it, Ben. They can't handle it. Herc is the fraud here, Ben. It's straightforward. And it's sad to see, because I actually liked Herc. When he first started in media, he seemed to be kind of anti-establishment. And then something happened to this guy. I don't know what happened to him, but he became one of them. He became one of the blob. He became one of the compromised, one of the softies, one of the guys that I just finished describing in general. It's really gross, man. I just don't know why people can't go the other path. Why can't they go the path of a Marcelo Bielsa to relentlessly pursue truth and not always look for the angles of attack on other humans? Trash.
I wonder what it was though, that like flipped the switch on him. Do you think it's signing a contract with ESPN or some incentive to, like, Gary, humans react to incentives, right? So there has to be a reason why he's now, like, not anti-establishment and he's now, like, defending, basically, the Federation. So
there's two things. One, well, there's several things, but one is what usually sells in media is not the truth. Unfortunately, what usually sells in media is sensationalization, creating controversy, creating division, all that negative crap is usually what people click on. They want to see the spiciness. Okay. So that's already one incentive for somebody to not sit there and just divulge truth. Okay. They have to kind of spin it in one way or another. The other incentive that typically happens or thing that happens to people is if you aren't good at something, you're not skilled, you're not the best, you're not remarkable, or you fear that you have no capability for that, or you don't want to work your ass off to get to a level of being outrageously remarkable, you almost have no choice but to comply with your boss or your bosses and the incentives in the system. You can't stray away because since you have no talent, if you stray away from what a potential employer would want in a job, then you don't have a job. You don't have a job. So it's a very rare exception, like Mourinho, like Pep, like Pochettino now, right here in that we're witnessing it, who are remarkable people. And they're like, fuck you. I'm going to say whatever the fuck I want because you don't own me. You kind of break your chains, Ben, if you're remarkable. And when you're not remarkable, like Hercules is not remarkable, you learn to love your chains and roll with it.
Yeah. I want to bring in some other users that I found, Gary, that in the past, you know, a couple months ago were absolutely shitting on Pochettino, and now all of a sudden he's their hero, you know. Should I name their name or fuck it, huh?
Yeah, if they publish publicly, why not?
Well, if USMNT takes, I think the talent evolution that Maurice, and by the way, this is back in September.
Okay.
I think the talent evaluation that Mauricio Pochettino has shown so far is terrible. The worst of any USMNT coach in recent memory. I guarantee you that if Greg Berhalter was still the head coach, even he wouldn't be starting his own son over players like McKennie, Musa, Johnny, or even Tesman. He offers nothing to this team, and he's talking about Berhalter now. Shouldn't even be on the roster, okay? Yesterday, or when they played Uruguay, Berhalter, wow, I'm shaking. Berhalter will make the World Cup roster off his set pieces alone. What a beautiful cross to Freeman. And then he says, man, yesterday was fun. Haven't felt this excited about the USMNT and what they're going to do going forward in a long time. Hopefully they're able to bring this momentum into the World Cup. Diego Luna, 4-0. Pochettino ball has officially arrived. What a change in narratives, okay?
No apologizing for smearing the guy. No acknowledgement of like, hey man, look, everybody gets even frame it. Even be charitable to yourself and say, look, everybody gets things wrong. I just got this one wrong. Like none of that. No. Just as if your earlier comments never happened, Benny. It never happened.
Yeah. You know what, Gary, in researching all of this, I actually did find a lot of those people where it was like, fuck Pochettino, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. But then yesterday they posted like, wow, like, I owe Pochettino an apology. Like, I'm sorry, I was wrong. You know, it's fucking funny, man. Even, where is it, dude? Tactical manager. We love this guy, was a great guy. But June 10th, he says, U.S. soccer might need to fire Pochettino before it's too late. Then again, will it even matter with these players? But November 18th, a couple of days ago, Pochettino has won me over. Full support until the World Cup is done, where ultimately is where we will judge his work. But he does say full support doesn't mean no criticism, but this is a different USMNT. He changed my mind.
At least he acknowledges in his post that his mind was different earlier.
Yeah, exactly.
At least there's that. Most people don't even, is that as if their earlier comments never existed? No. No acknowledgement.
Yeah. How about Alexi Lalas a couple months ago saying, you know, why the hell are we paying Pochettino $6 million if he can't do anything? The whole point of bringing him in is that he can do more with these players. He laments the fact that U.S. is not a soccer-playing nation. This is not a soccer-first country. But you know what they do in a soccer-first country? They wouldn't abide by this. Okay, look, hell no. It would be on to the next one and get somebody in that can do things that would show us we're going in the right direction. All right, Pochettino, you want that Argentinian type of spirit and ruthlessness? Well, here it is. This is not good enough. Goodbye. And then think a couple hours ago, she says, now I'm cautiously optimistic and see some method to the madness.
Man, I don't know what to say. This is literally why I started 343 in 2009. I literally started it because of all of this trash that you just finished reading. I'm like this can't continue because there was nobody, I mean, zero people who were out there speaking the truth that knew what the fuck was going on. So I'm like, I've had enough. I have to jump into the arena and start writing stuff. That's literally why it started, Ben, because this shit was fucking so pervasive, and it's still pervasive, obviously.
Yeah, man. To me, it's sad that like people, they just can't be wrong, dude. And it's like, all right, if you make a mistake or if you say something and you get disproven, like just fucking own up to it, bro. Or say, you know what? No, I was wrong. This guy actually does know what he's doing, but they won't do that, bro. They're so protective of their ego and they want to feel like they're the ones that know everything. It's kind of sad to me, dude.
Really sad. Really sad. But Benny, they'll flip again.
Oh yeah. 100%. They will.
In an instant. And then they'll make up stories as to why they said the things that they said positively. They'll say, let's say he gets whatever. Let's say the next string of bad results from Pochettino, whether it be in the friendlies or in the World Cup itself, they'll be like, yeah, that shit from Uruguay, it's because the Uruguay players, it was just a friendly, guys. It was just, that'll be the, those were just friendlies. Those don't count. But clearly they're counting now though, like big time. Like some people are saying, fuck, like we might make a deep run in the World Cup. So clearly the friendlies do count now. When the team fails, when Pochettino gets L's on his record, they'll be like, ah, super fraud. I knew it all along. That thing with Uruguay, those were just friendlies.
Yep. It's funny, man. Funny times that we're living in. All right, great. Let's end with something not related to the USMNT. A comment that we got, and I know you tagged me in it, but I wanted to bring it up. It's a good question. If you were a young player that wanted to play in Europe, would you go the USL route?
Okay, first I need to preface this because it seems like, especially on Instagram, that folks don't know what we've accomplished here, right? What it is that we do and our history. I won't dive deep into it. This is a whole other topic, but I've gotten a whole bunch of players to Europe from the United States. And in fact, you know, our group was among the pioneers, if not the spearhead of the pioneers, to really crack open the European pipeline from the United States in a serious way. So sure, Pulisic went there, was the ultimate pioneer, but that's just the, you know, one player, one sample, and Weston right behind him. But the flood that came after that, we had a big hand in that occurring. So let's put that aside and talk about the gentleman's question. What should a young player do if they want to get to Europe, and should they go to USL? It depends, because the most important ingredient is, are you any good? Are you any good? Because if you're not a great player, then what does this matter? The question doesn't matter anymore. So I don't even want to answer the question if the player wasn't even great. Okay. So let's assume
Gary. How do you know you're good though? How do you know that you have what it takes? Because that's a whole other topic too. And you say, is the player good? How do you define that?
Yeah. Right?
Because maybe it's a parent. It's like, yeah, my kid actually is fucking great, but in reality, he's shocking.
Yeah. That's two episodes, Benny. How do you know if a player is great? Let me bypass that. Maybe let's make a little note and we're going to talk about that next episode. Okay.
Okay.
Let me bypass that and I'll answer a part of it with this. If the player goes to USL and let's say I'm hoping he's like 17 years old and he's already kind of going to debut in a professional match with the USL, or 18 at the latest, 18, 19, you better be like among the best players in the USL. Like immediately among the best players in the USL. At 18, 19 years of old age, to have a chance for a European club when your agent, hopefully your agent, is capable of marketing you and willing to do the work to market you to European clubs. That's the only way a European club will even consider you, frankly, okay? Even take a look at you. You have to understand that the second division in the United States, you know, when you say that to European clubs, they're like, okay, well, why should I care, Gary? This is the second division of the United States, okay? But if the player is really good, like I just said, and is on the stat sheet like crazy and is among the best players in USL, with the reputation of your agent, somebody's going to look at him. And then comes the crux of this person's question. USL, the team that you're on, the club, would facilitate and will not get in the way of a transfer to Europe. They're going to fight for their interests, you know, but they know that if they fight too hard, and especially if your agent is good, any good, they fight too hard, the deal gets torpedoed, and then the USL club just lost an amazing chance to claim to their entire community, to claim to everybody, to the world, really, we developed this player and shipped him off to Europe. So they're going to do everything in their power as best they can to make the player a success and get them overseas. So from that perspective, great choice going to USL. Great choice. The downside of going to USL is if you don't kill it when you first start at 17, 18, 19, and now all of a sudden you're 20, 21, 22, and you're not the best player in USL, then you're done. I mean, there are exceptions. There could be an exception, but let's be realistic. The probability is like you're not going to get a chance. Contrast that to going to MLS. Well, the same thing kind of holds. To get an opportunity to go overseas, all the same things have to happen. You have to be playing, having significant playing time, a lot of playing time, showing very well with the playing time that you're getting. And then you have to have an agent that is willing to fight for you to make that transfer actually happen. Because unlike USL, MLS does not feel any pressure to get you overseas. They could give a shit about getting you overseas unless it's going to make a huge splash, okay? Because transferring a player overseas to a club that is not a big time club doesn't make a big splash to them. Nobody cares. So they're not going to facilitate that for you. One of the other reasons they won't facilitate that for you is because what if they've been wrong all along about the player's quality and the player does go overseas to like a, not a huge club, just a lesser known club or mid-tier club or lesser league club. And he ends up killing it over there overseas. Then that has negative consequences for the MLS because it's like, what the fuck? How'd you let this player go, you know, for peanuts? And then he turns into a multi-million dollar player overseas. Then that's really bad. So they're very scared of that scenario. So there's much more to discuss, but those are the big broad brushes of the trade that exists between the two. So what should you do? It's a tough question. Very context dependent. I don't know. It depends. How good is the player? Really? Because you're going to have to kill it. You're going to have to kill it if you go to USL. And if you go to MLS, it's harder. I think it's a harder road to get to Europe if you go to MLS, honestly speaking. The other thing I should mention, because the public, understandably so, and fans and media have a very misguided notion that MLS cares about making money off of player transfers. They think that, oh, well, why wouldn't an MLS franchise want to accept a $1 million transfer fee for so-and-so, or a $2 million transfer fee, or a $5 million transfer fee? Like that, they're going to make money. This is a great, they think it's a great business decision, great business transaction, and that's how they make money. That MLS, the MLS owners don't, $5 million to an MLS owner, you guys don't understand, okay? That is like $1.50 to you and me. So the incentives are very different for those people. It's not like, ooh, I'm going to make money. I'm going to sell Brendan Aaronson for $3 million or whatever it was. It means that it's like you selling a fucking cup of lemonade, Benny, for a dollar. It means nothing. It doesn't impact them. It doesn't impact their business. The business model of MLS is a property, an asset sort of business transaction. They have so much money, they don't know where to park their money, Benny. They're not like you and me, where you, or the common folk, you park your money in a bank account. You do that, that the purchasing power of the dollar gets eroded year after year after year after year. What you are able to buy for $1 today will cost you $1.20 tomorrow or next year, or $1.30 the year after that, and $1.50 after that. The value of the dollar falls roughly 5 to 7% per year. So these people want to protect their wealth. How do you protect your wealth? Well, a lot of people buy real estate to protect their wealth. They park their money in purchasing property. A lot of people put their money in the S&P 500, into the stock market, to protect their wealth, because the stock market tracks inflation, real inflation, not the shit that they tell us from the government. So inflation goes up, purchasing power of the dollar goes down, but the stock prices go up along with inflation. So they're protecting their wealth. Another thing that ultra wealthy people do is buy football clubs, because it is a scarce asset. There's limited numbers of those assets, just like a Picasso painting. You think they buy a Picasso painting to hang it on the wall and admire it, you know, when they're chilling on their sofa watching Netflix or something like that? That's not why they buy a Picasso. The Picasso's not in their home. The Picasso's in some vault in some Swiss bank or something, just chilling there. It's a way of storing their wealth. Because the Picasso painting will appreciate in value over time because the purchasing power of the currency falls over time. So if they ever want to sell the Picasso in the future, the Picasso is worth 2 times as much, 3 times as much, 10 times as much, and they've preserved their wealth in that asset. So when you buy LAFC, a franchise, or FC Dallas or whatever, they do it for that reason. I am buying a limited, scarce asset that is only going to appreciate in value, especially when there's no promotion and relegation and there's you can't get relegated. I have a permanence in the top tier of professional soccer in the United States, which will appreciate naturally over time. Toronto FC, when they purchased it, I don't remember the numbers. Maybe it was like 50 million or 30 million. You guys have to look it up for yourself. That thing costs close to $1 billion. So it's a great asset to hold for the wealthy. It's much better than holding the S&P 500, a stock index. It's much better than fine art even at times. It's much better than real estate. Real estate appreciates at whatever it is, 7% per year on average. The S&P appreciates 11, 12% per year on average. If you do the percentage of an MLS franchise, it naturally appreciated at a way higher clip than that. So you think they're buying it so that they can develop a player and sell a player for $5 million? Guys, wake the fuck up. You don't know how the world works. You don't know how the world works. They don't care about soccer. They don't care about developing the sport, making it more competitive, making it better. They only care to the extent that it doesn't go underwater. That's it. They'll do the bare minimum to preserve a minimum amount of interest in the game, which there will always be interest in the game. Always. We have the best soccer market in the world with the wealthiest population in the world with disposable income in the world. So they barely have to move a pinky to preserve the integrity of their asset. They just sit on it, Ben. This is the business model, ladies and gentlemen. It's not about fucking selling a dumbass fucking player to fucking the Premier League. Who cares? They don't care.
I love it, Gary. From Pochettino to economics, bro. You cover it all. Hey, you should look into becoming an economics professor, bro. I feel like I just took a class right now. I just learned a lot in the last 5 minutes.
I could rant on the field of economics as well, Ben. Look, I'm not an expert in that. I have studied quite a bit of it, for sure. I have been in the markets for a long time. Yeah, let's not do this. Economics, we're going to get into a whole... a whole discussion about corruption all over. Everything's a scam, Ben. It's all a fucking scam.
Did you ever read a book called Freakonomics?
No, I've heard of it. It's very well known. I come from the school of what's called Austrian economics. I mean, I'm not formally trained in these things, just self-taught. So just like authors like Rothbard and what's his name, Mises, you know, those two guys are basically among the founding fathers of Austrian school of economics versus the Keynesian school of economics, which is what everybody here has been programmed with. And what everybody here has been programmed with is basically a theory that enables central banks to print money. So the central banks, i.e. the government, okay, prints money at will. They just print money, Benny. They need money for something? Let's run the money printer. Done. And every time they run the money printer, guess what happens to the value of your dollar and my dollar and everybody's dollar? It gets weaker. Because if there were only $100 in circulation and you had one of those dollars, you own 1/100th of everything that exists. And then if they were to print another $100, now your power is 1/200th of everything that exists. So they literally weakened the your purchasing power. And that's what we live in, Ben. They steal from us, basically, is what they do. Every time they print money, they steal from every one of us. This is the root of inflation. What do you think inflation is? You think prices just naturally go up because that is a law of physics, that is a force of nature that, prices go up. That's natural. That's how things actually are. No, that's not how things actually are. If technology gets better and better and better and better, shouldn't the price of the thing that gets produced get cheaper and cheaper and cheaper and cheaper? Did that make sense? Like, a house 100 years ago, okay, or 50 years ago, what was the technology like to build a house, to get the lumber, right? To cut the lumber, go to the rainforest or wherever it is, cut the lumber, transport the lumber, process the lumber, ship it to where it needs to go, construct it, you know, to specifications, pay the workers to construct it, all the other raw materials that go into a house. Imagine 50 years ago what the technology was like, or 100 years ago what it was like, okay, to actually execute all of that, right? And they produced the home, and the home sold for $20,000 or whatever it is, okay? Fast forward 50 years, or however long you want to go, okay? Isn't it easier now with technology to cut the lumber, transport the lumber, process the lumber? You know, all the processes have gone way easier to do. It costs a lot less, you know, in real terms to execute the building of a house. So why does a house today cost 30 times more than it did back then? No, it should cost less than it cost back then. So this people don't realize this stuff because they don't teach. I didn't know either. They don't teach this stuff to you. They don't want to teach this stuff to you. They don't want you to see these things.
Is this the philosophy of Austrian economics? Or?
It's foundational. And it is the antithesis of what governments here do for their own self-interest.
All right, dude. Send me over a book on Austrian economics.
Will do. I think the books, unfortunately, are extremely dense, which means it will probably put you to sleep. It's it's hard to read. I'll put it to you that way. And what I mean by dense is like every page you will read, myself included, and you're like, what the fuck did I just read? What does this even mean? And it's like you have to research every single thing that you're reading to even understand what it is that they're saying. Yeah, so I think the best thing to do for anybody who's interested is now we have an amazing tool with the AIs. Go to ChatGPT, I would say Grok, okay, over ChatGPT. Go to Grok and type in, hey, please, you're a world-class professor in Austrian economics. Give me a first Austrian economics lesson 101 as if I know nothing about economics. You know, and just boom, the first one. And then start digging in from there. Way better than getting a book to start out with, in my opinion.
All right, dude. I'm freezing my neck off over here. Any parting remarks on USMNT, Pochettino?
Yeah, only parting remarks to our audience. I really do appreciate all of you. Thank you for being here. In my opinion, the only way that we can bring about change to this quote unquote corrupt system that we have is to support the independents. And the best way for you to support the independent media out there, such as yours truly, is for you to go to your circle that you have communications with or some influence over and teach them. Teach them what it is that you believe is true. And hopefully what you believe is true has a lot of parallels with what it is that we've been saying here since 2009. And that is how we win at the end of the day, because the battle is a battle of narratives. It's about winning hearts and minds. And the longer that we're quiet, we will lose. And I can't do it myself and whatever other independents out there. And I want to give a shout out to Eric Winalda, because he's the only other one who has been a ex-US men's national team player and also in the media for a number of years, who had the balls, Ben, to go against the establishment, because he also is, in my strong opinion, in pursuit of truth and truth alone. So he's on his own now. He has his own YouTube channel. Hopefully we can put it up here on the screen for everybody to follow. And he has very good takes. I don't agree with everything, obviously. And why should we? We're all human. But is he independent? Yes, he's independent. So everybody should head on over and listen to him as well. But we can't do it by ourselves. You all have to go out and be little, for lack of a better term, little viruses that infect your group of 10 or 15 or 20 or 100 people out there. And then those infections spread further and further and further. And that's how we change everything for the better. Those are my parting remarks.
Love it, dude. That was nice, bro. Usually your remarks to the audience are somewhat negative. Not to our fans, but just saying in general, the people that listen, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, let's get Eric Winalda on the podcast, bro.
Hit him up. Hopefully I can dispatch you and you can go and close the sale. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.